from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, is good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dornovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Syracuse and Duke just 2 days away. We're breaking down everything you need to know for the biggest game of the regular season for the Syracuse Orange. I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Owen Valentine and Ben Schulman. Let's quickly start with the two games that we haven't talked about since last time we were on. First, with Pittsburgh, a 69-61 victory at home.
Well, this was just kind of that quintessential Syracuse basketball game that you've seen this season. A game of runs, really. When you look at this, Syracuse out to a big lead the entire game. Pitt cuts it down to two, and then the fouls at the end kind of elevated this for a more kind of, it looked like a better win for Syracuse than it actually was. This was down to the wire, really, with Pitt. And you thought for a little bit that Pitt would pull off the complete comeback, that really big come-from-behind swing. And it's just been the story of the season for SU. They have not been able to maintain that lead, and it's just a bit to kind of go to – it parallels that three-point shooting, that game of runs. Syracuse has really had a ton of awesome runs where they're going to go on a 10-0 run or whatever it wants to be, but they let up a lot of big runs as well, and that was kind of the trend towards the end of this one and why it was a close game.
Yeah, the Orange really struggled to shoot in this game. I think it was Girard that went 1-for-7. He and Hughes combined 1-for-11. Mm-hmm. One of the positives I did take out of this game was I thought that Cuse relied on inside scoring a lot better than they have in the past. This may have been Mark Dolezal's best game of the season. He scored 17 points, 7 rebounds. But he was really, like, for the first time, I thought, dominating in the post. He was making lots of moves. He had a nice spin. So I liked that they, when they weren't able to shoot the three, that the Orange were able to lean on another facet to score. But still, again, you know, this is why people are concerned about Syracuse, is they can have a lead that I think it got close to 20 points, and then it gets cut right back down mm-hmm. in a matter of minutes. So very shaky, but at least they came out with the win.
Syracuse shot just 24% from behind the arc in this game, but it was a good game for Barama Sidibe, good game for Quincy Guerrier, great game for Dolezal, like you said. But it wasn't a sign of things to come for success down low. Just 2 days ago against Clemson, had the exact opposite outcome in the paint.
Yeah, I think one of my biggest takeaways from that Pitt game was that Syracuse was able to kind of overcome Elijah Hughes having an off day. The scoring came elsewhere, and that's why you've got a big game from Guerrier, a bigger game from Sidibe, and you see Dolezal with 17 points. It was something that I was really excited about and really proud of this team, that they were able to do something like that because of the heavy reliance on Hughes and Boeheim for the bulk of scoring all season long. But that wasn't the case against Clemson. It was really, there wasn't much scoring productivity outside of Hughes and Boeheim. Joseph Girard with 10 second-half points, which was really big. But besides that, I mean, Dolezal plays a mediocre game, not bad, not good. And then just, it was a defensive struggle. And when you've looked at this team all season long, it's kind of been the, okay, if Sidibe gets into foul trouble, they've got Dolezal. If Dolezal gets into foul trouble, Sidibe can play. There really haven't been too many situations where they've both been in foul trouble, and that really exploited Syracuse down the line.
Yeah, the Orange had nothing inside once both Sidibe and Dolezal went out of the game, and I think that's the first thing you notice when you look at the box score, is there's very little input from both those guys because they weren't able to play. And then Tevin Mack, who comes out of nowhere seemingly, you know, mm-hmm. you're talking about Amir Sims is the big guy that you're worried about on Clemson. He dropped 25 on Duke, but the Orange, I don't want to take credit away from Tevin Mack, he had an incredible game, but they gave it to him a little bit. You know, they weren't challenging him when they were. It was touch fouls, and he was getting a lot of opportunities to go make three-point plays. You know, we said that they couldn't let Sims go off for this many points. Yeah. Well, it doesn't really matter if it's Sims or if it's Mac. They let a big man go in there and score 32 of the 71 points for Clemson, and you're never going to win that way.
And you say a big man. Tevin Mack is 6'5".
Yeah.
I mean, Tevin Mack is a guard who just absolutely dominated Syracuse down low. You look at Marek Dolezal and Barama Sidibe, 26 minutes for Dolezal fouls out, 21 minutes for Sidibe fouls out.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jesse Edwards, who has to play the final 6 minutes of the second half.
And you could just tell he was out of place. That pass that comes down to him down low, you think he's going to make this big basket, have this big freshman moment, that kind of freshman season-defining moment, and he gets a little hesitant. He doesn't shoot, and he goes to pass to Guerrier, and it's just behind him. So I thought that that was going to be his big moment, but it just wasn't, and it was the kind of the icing on the cake for what this game was in terms of the big man play for Syracuse. You said it. Tevin Mack is not a big man. He's listed as a guard slash forward, so I guess you can kind of include him in that middle of the pack conversation, but he basically just did to perfection what exploits the 2-3 zone. He comes from the short corner and flashes to the high post, and it just wreaks havoc on Syracuse's defense. You've got to have Sidibe come to the top of the key, and there's not a quick enough recovery. Dolezal comes to the top, Sidibe comes to the top, and if you don't get there quick enough, because of Mack's ability to play both in terms of the guard and the forward, he's able to just turn and shoot. And if you close out too quickly, he's got the ability to hit the floor and dribble to the basket or find someone, and that's exactly what he did. He scored 16 of 18 of Clemson's points in a five-minute stretch from like 12 minutes to 7 minutes in the second half. It was just feed him at the top of the paint, and he was able to do the rest. Syracuse had no answer for him, and it had to do a little bit with the fact that both Dolezal and Sidibe were in foul trouble, but there still has to be some sort of answer because any team has the ability to put someone in that exact same position, and if Syracuse can't counter that, they're going to get exploited even more in ACC play with three top 10 teams on the horizon for the Orange.
Well, it just comes back down to the biggest glaring issue that we've been talking about now for 2 weeks. You know, Tevin Mack was on Syracuse, he'd be the heaviest player on the roster. He's 227 pounds, you know. And he's a guard, but he is pushing our big men, or not our big men, Syracuse's big men, pardon me, around. And the help wasn't there. I would have thought that, you know, Guerrier would have been able to help out a little more than he was able to defensively in this game, considering he and Mack measure up pretty well. But, you know, Mack is a senior. He's been around, and you could tell he was smart. And
he's played the zone.
Yeah, he's seen Syracuse, and he has come up in big moments this year. You know, he had 22 against Duke in Clemson's win over Duke, 17 in an overtime win against North Carolina. But it was just, even Clyde Trapp, who was really good too, was scoring a lot inside. It felt like pretty much at will he was able to get layups. So, you know, you can't defend that poorly in the interior. And then at the same time, you know, we may not be talking about a loss if either Jesse Edwards catches a pass and goes right at the net in transition, or Guerrier is ready for his bounce pass and one of them puts away a two-on-one layup.
To kind of bring it back to last week's discussion with Guerrier versus Sidibe in terms of the starting lineup, I think I've come to a new conclusion that it's not Sidibe at the five that's the issue. I think the issue is actually that with Dolezal and Hughes at the wings, at the base of the zone, it's too slow. I've kind of been looking at this issue and kind of looking at how they play. When Sidibe or Dolezal, or when it would be Sidibe, when Sidibe has to rise and cover the high post, there's not a quick enough kind of consolidation. And it's really been one of the big issues that Syracuse has had this season. And they're not able to recover fast enough. So if the big man for the other team or whoever's at the high post tries to make a cut or tries to take a shot or tries to hit the floor and dribble or find someone in the short corner, they're able to do that pretty much at will because there's not a quick enough recovery. And I don't know if that's a knock at Hughes and Dolezal or just when you've got Guerrier in there, it's a little bit quicker because when you've got Dolezal down low, you've now got Hughes and Guerrier, which is a faster combo than Hughes and Dolezal. I think that's the issue. It's not necessarily Sidibe because Dolezal gets exploited similarly, but when you've got the two quicker options on the wings, they're able to recover a little bit faster.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference in who's playing on that wing, whether it's Guerrier or Dolezal, But the bottom line is that if Jesse Edwards is playing the final 6 minutes of a meaningful ACC game, there's a big problem.
Yeah.
And it's not anything against Jesse Edwards. I called into the double overtime after the Clemson game and just said, like, listen, like, it's not anything against Jesse Edwards. Like, yes, should he have just turned around and easily laid that ball up when it was
at home.
2-on-1? It would have been so easy. But if you're Jesse Edwards, I mean, they double Elijah Hughes on that play. And then you've got Edwards, who doesn't have a ton of just basketball experience, period, gets the ball down low, and it's a close game against a really meaningful ACC opponent, and he just panics.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been in that situation ever. I mean, the last time he played before this game was garbage time against Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line is that you just can't put a kid like that in a position where he needs to be good in an ACC game. Jesse Edwards is a project.
Like, yeah.
He is a kid who has a lot of potential. I think he has potential to be a good center on this team, but like next year or the year after, he is not a start of freshman center right now. And for Dolezal, I mean, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit where you didn't say that Dolezal had a bad game. There were a few like ticky-tacky fouls down low that I know some fans weren't very happy about. But if you're Marek Dolezal, you can't foul out of the game in 26 minutes.
I know
it's a lot to ask of him to never be in foul trouble because he's done a good job of it this year so far. But, I mean, Brahma Sidibe fouls out in 21 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're not even 21 meaningful minutes, really.
You've got two guys with a combined 47 minutes that picked up 10 fouls. That can't happen.
I mean, Sidibe somehow increased his average personal fouls per game in this game.
Yeah, and then you've got to throw Jesse Edwards, who's only played in 13 of Syracuse's 21 games this season, and his minutes total in terms of average is minuscule. And you throw him into the mixer in a one-possession Clemson or ACC basketball game that's basically not a must-win, but there is a ton of importance in terms of momentum, in terms of Syracuse's tournament implications. This is a huge game, and you throw Edwards right into the middle of it, and he's got to step up, and you can't necessarily knock him for not stepping up, but you would have hoped he'd be able to do that. You would have hoped he'd be able to have that big moment. He got a steal. He kind of made up for it. He pokes the ball away down low, but that doesn't necessarily make up for the 2 points that you took away from Syracuse, because you've got to, I mean, you said it, lay it in or toss it up for Guerrier. It was a 2-on-1, just do something.
A 2-on-1, and you turn the ball over.
Yeah.
That is just, it's the last thing you can do. It's a close game, and you've got two guys standing down there against one Clemson defender, and you just can't put the ball in the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the story of the game for Syracuse. This game was literally in their hands.
Yeah.
The Orange led by as many as 10 points in the second half and can't come away with the win down in Clemson. And now, I mean, a chance for a bounce back, but it's against Duke. The Duke Blue Devils, one of the best teams in the country, according to the end-all, be-all Ken Pomeroy rankings,
ranked
second
too.
On Ken Pom, ninth in the top 25, first in the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good Duke basketball team. Surprise.
I'll preface this by saying that in terms of a turnaround redemption game, it happened last season. Syracuse drops one to Georgia Tech. They go down to Cameron Indoor and beat Duke. Whether or not that's going to happen again this season, I'm not sure. I would say it's less likely than even last year's win was. But this is an opportunity, and Duke is an incredible basketball, this team. Year in and year out, they seem to just be able to find themselves in the top of the NCAA, and that's you know, you tip the cap to Mike Krzyzewski because he's able to do this every year, but it's just a good basketball team. Top to bottom, we were saying before we got on the podcast today that there's just not a bad stat for Duke. And Ben, you kind of just said that it was, you try to find a weakness, and there really just isn't one, and it's going to be tough for Syracuse to be able to find that as well.
Yeah, I think this team presents a very different test than last year. You know, last year you're coming in, And it's all about, all right, how are we going to do anything to Zion? And then there's RJ, and then there's Cam Reddish, this long list of freshman recruits nearly rivaling the Fab Five.
Carey rocks the baby, crossover dribble around a screen from Chukwu, stolen by Jones again, in transition, Barrett with a tomahawk lefty flush. It is showtime in Durham.
He gives it away, Williamson comes away with a turnover. All alone ahead of the pack, Zion Williamson. Skies up and throws it down with the right hand.
Jones holds near side, lobs it inside for Williamson, who flushes it with two hands. Zion Williamson is a run stopper supreme. He has not missed on 10 field goal attempts.
And rebound for Reddish. Here come the Blue Devils with numbers. 4-on-1. Jones up top, and Barrett slams it home with the left hand. Trey Jones, the facilitator, and Barrett has 30 points.
But now you have a team which still, of course, with Carey and Stanley are relying on freshmen, but their periphery players are a lot better, I think, than they were last year. Yeah. Last year's team was more fun and less, you know, they weren't the best team in the country. They weren't going to win the national championship. And I'm not saying that they are the best team in the country this year, but they look like they play much more structured basketball. And it's guys like Matthew Hurt, who's shooting 42% as a stretch four. And Alex O'Connell has another year of experience. And Jack White has another year of experience. And Javon Delorier has another year. So I think for Syracuse, they may be able to hang in this game better. It's less of a team that's conducive to blowouts. But they're going to have to really battle to contain some of these guys, because it's not just about stopping Carey and Stanley. I mean, Trey Jones is a way better player than he was last year. Like, he's looking really good. So I think it's going to be really tough for me to see Syracuse coming out with a win. But, you know, you can't rule out the Orange in almost any basketball game.
And you said it too. I mean, so many of the stats, the team last year was really exciting, like everybody knows. But you look at the stats from this year to last year, I mean, the field goal percentage is up this year. The three-point shooting percentage is up this year. They're averaging the same amount of points per game. I mean, it's just such a good basketball team.
Yeah.
And you look especially at Trey Jones. I think he's the one constant from the two teams, but a constant that's improved.
Yeah.
This year, Jones is averaging 15 points, 6.8 assists a game. And last year, yes, there was the trio of Barrett, Williamson, Reddish, who kind of handled the scoring on their own. But Trey Jones was just at 9.4 points a game and 5.3 assists. So this year, Jones is taking on a little bit more of the scoring load, and he's still making better passes than he was last year, too. And when you have a more experienced point guard on a Duke basketball team,
it's dangerous. Very, very dangerous. Trey Jones has made such a great jump this season. He wasn't bad last season, as you were saying, but that just the ability to distribute and just run this team has been incredible. His jump and kind of just, it's that little bit more experience. There are freshman mistakes. It happens naturally. It takes a little bit of time to become a real star in the NCAA for most people. And he's just kind of done his job. And he stepped up in ways that I didn't necessarily expect him to. I think he's scoring a little bit better than I anticipated he'd be able to do. And it's that distribution that's really impressed me this season. Leads the ACC in assists. And it's just really been a special player to watch and a special guy to just kind of see at the forefront of a Duke offense. It's a bit of a different look because it's not necessarily that Zion, that Reddish, that RJ kind of situation where you've got just that sheer power and that sheer ability to score. It's a bit of a different look, and he's creating opportunities for other guys while creating great opportunities for himself, and it just really, really works and elevates a Duke offense that's going to be good either way, but with him at the top of it, it's really going to be even better.
And I don't like to say this, but really, do you even think Syracuse beats Duke last year if Trey Jones actually plays in that game? I mean, you know, the time that Syracuse got Duke, Jones got hurt 6 minutes into the basketball game.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they relied on Barrett a lot for playmaking last year, and it was kind of a split job. But now Jones has really become the focal point. He's going to bring the ball up, and I just think they have too many weapons. Like how do they stop Carey? How do they stop Carey? He's too big. He's too dominant of a rebounder. He just put up 26-13 on Pitt. And that was a pretty close game, but even still, when they needed Carey, he was easily able to score. And then you have Stanley out at the wing. Hurt can hurt you inside and out. And then just a list of guys. I know Jordan Goldwire is now breaking into the starting lineup, and he's gone for double digits a couple times. There's a lot you have to deal with. It's not like one guy gets hurt or one guy has an off night, or we can lock RJ down, and if he has a bad volume shooting night, you know, then maybe they go score. This is going to be a very difficult test for the Orange, and they're going to have to deal with multiple three-point shooters that go over 40%.
Yeah, it's a really deep Duke team, too. Like, there's options off the bench. You see Coach K go pretty deep onto the bench game in and game out. You've got, what, six players who've played in all 20 games, and that is not even including Trey Jones or Cassius Stanley, who've been out a game or two apiece. They've got so much depth, and they can attack you from so many different options in so many different manners that it's going to be a tough one for Syracuse to figure out.
And to dive a little deeper into how this team compares to last team, Ben talked a little bit with somebody he's kind of familiar with looking ahead at Saturday's game.
Ben Schulman here with ESPN college basketball and baseball broadcaster Dan Schulman. Thank you for coming on, Dan. And Syracuse is gearing up for a massive matchup with the Duke Blue Devils. Of course, this isn't the hyped-up Blue Devils of last year with RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson. And before we get into Saturday's matchup, I want to touch on those famed Duke Blue Devils of last year. What made RJ and Zion so special, and how did guys that were that talented play together and really find a style that worked for them?
Yeah, as you know, Ben, I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen a team that had like a rock star following like Duke did last year. And a lot of it, obviously a ton of it was due to Zion. A lot of it was due to RJ as well. I think that in RJ's case, let's start with him. I think he came in a tremendously accomplished player at the high school level and on the international level as a young guy. And actually, he was the preseason guy that everybody was talking about, more than Zion. Zion blew up in the first game, the Champions Classic, I should say, with a tremendous performance. But RJ was the guy that people were talking about more than Zion because he had led Canada to a world championship in an under-18 tournament, had destroyed the U.S. team on the way to doing it. But RJ is a tremendously mature guy, a great driver, a guy who's willing to shoulder a heavy load, like a guy who gets, hey, if my team is going to win, I need to be good. And he had a very good year. I mean, he got overshadowed a little by Zion last year. Everybody got overshadowed by Zion. But RJ had a really good year. And I think, you know, what people never really appreciated about him is he was a really good passer, too. He is a really good passer. I mean, he does a lot of good things. Zion is unlike anybody I've ever seen in 25 years of covering college basketball. I've never seen a guy that big, run that fast, jump that high, spin that quickly, and just embarrass people the way that he did, play with the joy that he had as well. I'm not saying he's going to be the best player who ever lived. I'm just saying I've never seen a player like him before. Like, they don't make people that size who can do those kinds of things. I think they were able to play together because both of them are unselfish. Again, and RJ is a very willing passer, and because the two guys love each other. Like, I was at many of their practices, and they were like, you know, giggly nine-year-olds together. They really liked playing together. The guy who I thought suffered a little bit was Cam Reddish, because there's only one basketball, and there are only so many touches to go around. But for RJ and Zion, I thought it worked really well for them.
Yeah, definitely Reddish ended up having a bit of a different impact maybe than some people had thought. It turned from a big three into more of a big two and Cam Reddish. But moving now into this year's team, one of the standout players for the Blue Devils so far has been Cassius Stanley, the freshman. And for those of us who haven't seen him play here at Syracuse, what should we expect from Stanley?
I love him. I think he's a great player. Like, he's not going to be a top five pick or anything. He didn't come in with the hype of a Zion or an RJ. But he looks to me like your prototypical future NBA two guard. He's 6'5", 6'6", incredible athleticism, like great athleticism, can jump through the roof, can knock down a three-point shot, a good shooter, can run up and down the floor, can score in transition, can guard. I see him on mock drafts as a second-round pick, and I don't get it, to be honest with you, because I don't think this is that deep of a draft. And I think he's going to be a really good player. I think somebody's going to get a steal when they take Cassius Stanley. But he is getting better and better. He's had a couple of little injuries this year, missed a game and a half earlier this season, has gotten just played through some nagging things every now and again. But I believe he's getting better and better by the game. and he's a tough cover. And I don't know who they'll put on him, if it'll be Boeheim or whether, well, I guess it depends which side of the court he's on for the zone. So but you got to get out on him at the top of the zone. And if you get out on him, he can dribble by you and get into the middle. And in transition, he's lethal. So I don't know if they'll try to set him up on Gerard's side of the zone or just whatever side he's on. But Cassius Stanley's a really, really good player. And listen, they got other guys. Trey Jones is a good player. You know, they got a lot of good players on this team. But Stanley's a guy who can go off for 25 or 30 if he gets hot.
Another big name, of course, is Vernon Carey Jr., who is just tearing up the ACC right now. Kind of the same question. What are we going to see from Carey? A lot of people have seen a little more of him, but we still don't know a ton.
Yeah, a very different player than Zion, obviously, but everybody's a very different player than Zion. He's not the kind of guy who's going to blow you away with, oh my God, I can't believe how high he jumped, or oh my God, I can't believe he did this. But he's just really, really good. His footwork is great in the post. He's left-handed, and he can score going the other way, but he's just got a knack. Even if you know he's going to try to get over that right shoulder and put it a little left-handed jump hook, he gets it done. He's huge. He's 6'10", 270, and he is strong. So, you know, whoever's in the middle for Syracuse, whether it's Sidibe or Dolezal, they're going to be giving up a lot of weight. Carey is strong. He's smart. He's efficient. He's got good touch around the rim. He gets the ball up on the rim very, very softly. I can't tell you how many shots I've seen him make this year where he just puts it up on the rim and it bounces around and it goes in. But he's got good hands and probably better feet. Getting to the spot that he wants to get to and then using great footwork to get the shot off that he wants to. Pretty athletic, smart player. Can stay out of foul trouble. He's really good. He's, you know, a possible lottery pick, I think, at the next level. And, you know, he's one of these guys where you walk out of there and go, yeah, he played pretty well. You would guess he had like 15-8, and he had 23-12 or something like that. He's just a really, really solid player.
So looking now at, you know, kind of the duo of this year and the duo of last year, and obviously Trey Jones has stepped up a lot, and he's actually the second leading scorer. But how do you think on an individual level a guy like RJ and Stanley compare, or Zion and Carey compare, and then together as a duo, how do you think their playing styles compare?
It's an interesting question on an individual level, because Zion and Carey are very different types of players, and RJ and Stanley are very different types of players. So it's hard to make a comparison. I think overall, just on a talent level, I think you have to give the edge to Zion and RJ. And that's not to take anything away from Carey and Stanley, because they are terrific players. And you mentioned Trey Jones. Trey Jones is a much better player this year than he was last year. Much better. And I think Duke has the chance to be a better team this year. Like, even as great as Zion and RJ were and all that, I never thought they could win the national championship last year because they couldn't make a three. Reddish didn't have a great shooting year. O'Connell didn't shoot the ball well at all. And everybody knew that. So they would surround Zion. They would collapse on RJ when he drove. And just eventually you knew they were going to, you know, they were going to run out of that. They were going to lose a game. I think the team, the way the pieces of the puzzle fit together, are better this year. I think the ball moves a little bit more. Again, Trey Jones is a great defender, much better shooter, great assist-to-turnover ratio. I think he's a really important part of it. Matthew Hurt's a good player, a stretch four, who can knock down some shots. Like, I just think they've got a better team. And their backup guys are all older, unselfish guys. Jordan Goldwire, who's actually moved into the starting lineup, but he's still a complimentary player. Jack White, Javon Delorier, Alex O'Connell. Like, they've got good players, 6, 7, 8, 9, coming off the bench. And I think they're a better team than they were last year. Maybe not as spectacular, maybe not as breathtaking, but I think they've got a chance to go deeper in the tournament this year than they did last year.
Duke 17-3 overall right now, 7-2 in the conference, which is tied with Florida State. They're a game behind Louisville. If you had to pick right now, who's going to be the ACC champion? Do you go with the Cardinals, Blue Devils, Seminoles, and why?
A regular season champion?
Yeah, regular season champion.
I think I would say Louisville, and I'm going to, this might not be the, you know, the deepest answer, but they're a game up and they've already beaten Duke. And I don't believe there's a return matchup at Louisville, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Louisville went into Cameron and won. So I really like Louisville. They've got a freshman, David Johnson, who was out in the first half of the year, who's playing now, and he's really good. He gives them another threat, another athlete, another ball handler. They've moved Darius Perry off the ball where he's more comfortable. You know, Jordan Warr is as good as anybody in the conference, and they've got length and depth and experience. So I would say Louisville and Duke in a foot race, slight edge to Louisville, Florida State third. And then after that, who knows, right? I mean, you got to try to, you know, if you're the ACC, you hope a couple of other teams kind of separate themselves. You can't get just three bids. You got to get more. I saw bracketology today. I guess Lenardi put out that 12 Big Ten teams he thinks could get in, and some of the other conferences, the big ones, are only getting like 14. So, you know, this game against Duke is obviously enormous for Syracuse. They've been playing better lately, the Clemson loss notwithstanding, and they've got some quality wins. But you beat a top five team in the country, and that's something that the committee takes notice of. You can have some bad losses if you can balance it out with good wins. And beating a team like Duke is about as good a win as you can get if you're the Cuse.
So you kind of steered me into my last question here. You know, the Orange were playing really good basketball before the loss last night to Clemson, but still a loss at Clemson by 1 point is not a season ender by any means. Do you think the Orange are going to make the tournament? How good of a chance do you think they have to make the tournament, and what do they need to do down the stretch?
I haven't looked at the rest of their schedule in its entirety. So what I think they need to do is not lose any of the games they're supposed to win. Like, you can't lose to anybody, the bottom teams of the ACC. And then when you're playing other teams that are kind of at your level, like, I know I'll be there for a North Carolina State game in a couple of weeks, got to win that game. It's on your home court. You got to win that game. Don't slip up against the bad teams and separate yourself a little bit by winning a couple of the pick'em games against the other teams that are kind of, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the ACC. The non-conference didn't help them. We all know that. But I still think they control their own destiny to a certain extent. They're playing much better. You know, I watch a fair number of their games. You know, you go there, so I'm interested in them. And they're playing better than they were earlier. And Clemson's not a bad team. Like, Clemson beat Duke, right? So, you know, Clemson can do that. But I still think Syracuse has a better than 50-50 chance of making it based on the way they're playing if they win the games they're supposed to win.
Syracuse will take on number 9 Duke at 8 p.m. Thank you for joining us, Dan. We appreciate it. Countdown to tip-off is at 7 p.m. Saturday, and back to the studio.
We thank Dan for joining us for that interview, and we are now back talking about Vernon Carey and what a dominating player he is going to be. As Dan mentioned, you have to deal with so many different guys. To be able to devote all your attention to Carey is really going to cost you in terms of a guy like Stanley being able to go off for over 20 points. But really, Carey is the guy. I looked at a list that Dick Vitale published on ESPN today of his early Wooden Award finalists, and he has Carey on that list along with a lot of upperclassmen. He's getting a lot of looks and is definitely going to go in the lottery in the draft. What do you guys think they can do? Because I'm lost for words on how to stop Vernon Carey.
I mean, Syracuse really struggled down low with Tevin Mack, who is 6'6", 227. And now all of a sudden you've got Vernon Carey coming in, who's 6'10", 270.
Let me just say,
he outweighs the heaviest player on Syracuse by 50 pounds.
Tevin Mack is like Bowser Jr., and Syracuse could not defeat Bowser Jr. And now, 4 days later, Syracuse has to face Bowser. He is bigger, he is better, and he's going to exploit you in so many more ways than Mack was able to do. And I have no clue how Syracuse can adjust to Vernon Carey. They could not adjust to Tevin Mack. They had no answer for him. How are they going to come out with an answer to someone who is 5 inches taller, 50 pounds heavier, and a far better basketball player? This is basically Syracuse's worst nightmare, because there's one stat that really stands out to me, and it has nothing to do with scoring. Well, it does kind of have to do with scoring or rebounding or blocks, which he leads Duke with and is in the top of the ACC in all three, the top five in the ACC in points, blocks, and rebounds. He, per KenPom, is fourth in the country in fouls drawn per 40 minutes.
Oh no.
He draws 7.7 fouls per 40 minutes, which means that Barama Sidibe, Marek Dolezal are in trouble, because he is just able to draw fouls like nobody else. And I don't know how Syracuse is going to be able to counter someone like him.
I mean, you can look at Clemson on Tuesday and make an argument and say, hey, Syracuse stopped Amir Sims. But let me be the first to completely counter that argument right now. The reason, one of the big reasons that Amir Sims has been so effective is that one of the things that Amir Sims does really well is that he spreads the floor. Amir Sims spends a ton of his time outside the three-point line, and when he's playing a man-to-man defense, Amir Sims can take your biggest guy, he can take him out to the perimeter, he can beat him off the dribble, he can make different things happen. He's a good three-point shooter, does a bunch of things well. Amir Sims is a really good big man because of how he stretches the floor. Vernon Carey does not do that. Vernon Carey is not going to stand out near the three-point line. He averages 0.6 three-pointers a game. That's not a lot.
No,
but that is less than
45% of the time.
And he does make 45% of the time.
He's 4-for-9
on, which is even more slightly terrifying. But more than likely, Vernon Carey is not going to be standing out at the three-point line.
No.
Vernon Carey is going to just bully you down low. And, I mean, Sidibe, I said it, Sidibe might foul out in 5 minutes.
It's going to be interesting to see how they work to defend a physical player like him, but someone who's also pretty mobile given his size.
Right.
You see him, I mean, it feels like every game he kind of just pops a steal onto the fast break and no one can catch him. But it's the same situation where you look at how Mack attacked Syracuse, and it was just up to the top of the key. He flashes to the high post, and that's where Carey can excel too. If he gets the ball there, he has the ability to shoot from that distance, but he also can beat a guy like Barama Sidibe or a guy like Marek Dolezal on the dribble. And he can find someone in the short corner or find another pass, but he can just beat you. And if he's not going to do that, if he gets the ball a little bit deeper, he can body you. And it's something that Syracuse doesn't do offensively, but Vernon Carey does incredibly well. He's got a repertoire of post moves that I don't know how Syracuse can counter. You said it last week. It seems like every time someone shot fakes, Barama Sidibe leaves his feet. Vernon Carey has an incredible shot fake alongside a ton of other post moves. He's going to be able to draw fouls like nobody else. He does it against far better defensive centers than Barama Sidibe and Marek Dolezal, and he's going to be able to do it against them pretty much at will, unless Syracuse pulls something out of the hat that no one has seen them do so far this season.
And I was thinking today, I was going, you know, Carey is probably the best big man that Duke has had since Marvin Bagley. He's 40 pounds heavier than Marvin Bagley.
Yeah.
He looks like Bagley, but he's got the weight of Zion.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
He plays like Bagley. Bagley could stretch it out a little more, but yeah, he's 270 pounds. Like, this is a, you know,
it's a
Vernon Carey could weigh similar to what Zion weighs when he gets to the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not. I don't know if you'd want to put on 15 more pounds, but it's not inconceivable.
Zion's 284.
Yeah. I'll tell you,
and
he's only got 15
pounds on
him. They're
going to cross soon.
I
bet you the Pelicans get Zion going down and Carey starts going up.
Vernon looks good at 270, though. Like,
yeah.
Zion looks big.
Yeah.
Vernon Carey just looks natural on him. Yeah.
Well, because he's also 6'10".
Exactly.
Yeah. This is just a unit.
Right now, he is the size of a center in the NBA. Like, he could play, I mean, I don't know if he could actually do it, but he could fit in on an NBA court, I don't think.
Easily.
And stand out.
I think pretty easily, yeah.
But I think there are only a couple ways you can really neutralize him. Just looking at the teams that have beaten Duke this year, Stephen F. Austin, he was horrible from the free throw line. That's his one, like, if there's one catch about Vernon Carey, and he's still not, I mean, like, historically horrible, but he shoots below 60%. So don't be afraid. I mean, if you're going to foul him hard, because if he makes and ones, you know, we're in trouble. If you can send him to the line, Syracuse is in a much better spot. And then against Louisville, he himself got into foul trouble.
Yeah.
He picked up four fouls, was only on the court for 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If this sounds a little crazy, but if Syracuse can work Sidibe or whoever's inside on offense so that Carey is expending a lot of his energy and potentially picking up fouls on defense, the less time, of course, he spends on the court, the better. They
yeah.
need him to have 2-3 fouls in the first half if Syracuse wants to pick up a win.
I even think it would be important for the Syracuse guards in terms of Gerard and Boeheim and Hughes to just put the ball on the floor and drive a little bit more than you've seen them do. They all have that ability. I think Boeheim has been incredible inside the perimeter, which is something that we have not really expected from him. But he's been great on the dribble drive. We know Hughes can do it, and Gerard has shown it at times. If those three can put the ball on the floor and try and dribble penetrate a little bit more, I think they can grab a foul or two on him because they've all got the ability to finish at the rim. And then if he does step, you can pass the ball off to a Sidibe or a Dolezal. I got to give Sidibe the one shout is that he has not missed a shot since January 11th.
I think in four games or yeah. five games.
Yes, he's only 12 for 12. However, I mean, he doesn't miss. Just dish them the ball, and it seems like every point he scores is wide open.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
If you can get him open, just let him score. Let him score. Just do that. You've got to attack Carey because that was one of the biggest things. He had, like, I say, his biggest lull of the season. He averaged 11.5 points in this lull, but he gets into foul trouble in that loss to Louisville. And then the following game against Miami, I don't know exactly what it was, but he comes out with his lowest field goal percentage of the season, just going 3-for-8 from the field. So,
and Duke still wins that game by 30 points.
Well, it was okay that he did it in that situation, but, I mean, he kind of cost him against Louisville. And if Syracuse can get him into foul trouble or play, it's tough to play a physical game against him, but that's just what they're going to have to do. Hopefully the refs aren't going to try and knock any ticky-tack fouls out, which I think hurt Dolezal a little bit, but you've got to be able to gauge the room a little bit in that situation. If Syracuse can get him into foul trouble or play him physically, which is a tough thing to do, they're going to have their best chance at shutting him down, and not shutting him down, but kind of holding him a little bit more stagnant than you've seen him go off, especially in that Pitt game. I feel like he's played his best game of conference play against Pitt with a 26-point, 13-rebound double-double. Basically had his way against the Panthers.
And here's something fun. We haven't even talked about Cassius Stanley yet. We haven't even talked about the dude. I mean, he's not putting up crazy numbers this year, but his efficiency is absurd. The dude is shooting. His effective field goal percentage is 56%. He has a PER of 20.5. Shooting 36% from three, averaging 12.2 points, 4.5 rebounds, and an assist per game. This dude doesn't demand the basketball a lot, but goodness is he good.
Yeah.
Well, that's why the numbers don't jump off the page or anything, but that's because, you know, he's good at picking his spots. You know, if Vernon Carey is the focal point of their offense that day, Stanley, which is in a way I think that he differs in a better way than Barrett, although I do think Barrett, for the most part, is a better player. Barrett wanted the ball a lot. Stanley will give up the ball. He doesn't need to take 15, 16, 17 shots a game.
R.J. Barrett averaged 18.5 field goal attempts per game. Cassius Stanley averages 8.6.
But R.J. Barrett averaged 22.5 points per game.
That's true, too.
But, yeah, Stanley recently, too, I mean, he put up 24 against Louisville in that game that Carey wasn't really playing very much, put up 20 against Miami. He's going to be tough. If he starts going off and Carey starts going off, then there's a problem. You need one of them in check.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come down to, you know, Cuse has been guarding the three-point pretty well recently. But if they compromise a bit to keep that short corner forward back a little bit more because they want to double Carey, then Stanley's going to start shooting.
There's kind of reminds me in a way, and not skill-wise, obviously, when you hear the comparison, but he reminds me of Howard Washington in that he just kind of does the job. Whatever you kind of need in that given day, he's able to do. Obviously, a far better scorer and just overall player, but in terms of him just kind of being almost like jello in that he can just kind of mesh into whatever role you need him for that day. If you need him to step up and be the big scorer, he's able to do that. You saw that against Louisville. But he can also just kind of play a backseat role and just do the job and be not a space filler, but just like he just fills the lanes and does exactly what he does. And doing that is enough to help propel Duke. He just works well, and he's a really talented player, really good player. And it's going to be, I'm going to say, nearly impossible for Syracuse to find a way to shut down both Carey and Stanley, because they're both just such versatile and talented players. And it's going to be an interesting one, because I genuinely have no idea what Jim Boeheim has in store for this game, because I'm not sure how you can hold these guys in check. And if they are able to, then it'll be an interesting game. But if not, there's a chance that Duke's going to be able to run away with this basketball game.
Starting five for Duke in this game, most likely going to be Vernon Carey, Trey Jones, Jordan Goldwire, Cassius Stanley, and Matthew Hurt. That's a really good starting five. We talked at length about Carey, about Jones, about Stanley, and how good they are. I mean, we'd have to have a whole other hour of the podcast if we were going to talk about Goldwire and Matthew Hurt and guys like Jack White and Joey Baker and Jevon Delorier. This is a really deep Duke team. Syracuse with their hands full on Saturday. I'm going to start with what I think needs to go right for Syracuse if they win this game. I mean, Syracuse, make no mistake, has a chance to win this game. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I think Syracuse has a really good habit of playing up to good competition.
Yes, they play up and they play down.
Especially at home. Right, play down to worse competition, but play up to good competition. Split the season series last year. Syracuse, I think, for this game, you need to have great days from Elijah Hughes and Buddy Boeheim. I think that's a given.
Mm-hmm.
Hughes and Boeheim both looked good against Clemson with 22 each. If they're around that range against Duke, that's a really good start. I think both of those, I think Hughes and Boeheim, actually, I think they both need to drive. I think they both need to attack Vernon Carey a little bit, try to get him in foul trouble, try to get him off the floor. Because, I mean, Ben said it, the longer he's on the floor, the worse it is for Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two need to drive. They need to be aggressive. You also need to see, I'm going down the list, and I'm just about to say that you need good games from everyone, but you do. You need a better offensive scoring game from Joe Girard, who has kind of struggled offensively the last few games. 10 second-half points against Clemson. Hopefully that's a trend that continues. You need Joe Girard in double digits. You need Marek Dolezaj in double digits. You need Dolezaj to kind of get back to what he did against Pitt. Maybe he doesn't need to score 17 points, but if Dolezaj has that kind of stereotypical Dolezaj game where he scores 13, grabs 8 rebounds, and dishes out 4 assists, that's the perfect ideal scenario for Marek Dolezaj in this game. Brahma Sidibe, I think, needs to play 25 minutes without fouling out. That is my goal for Brahma Sidibe. Play 25 minutes without fouling out against Vernon Carey. I think that's a success for Sidibe. And then Quincy Guerrier, probably around that 20-minute mark. Just come in, try to play good defense. Don't try to do too much offensively.
I think you need 8-8 from Guerrier.
I think 8-8 from Guerrier
does the job
on about 3 shots.
Yeah.
3 or 4 shots.
You don't need him shooting.
Right.
Well, he'll get fouled near the end of the game before in it. Like, he always finds his way
to the free throw line. Oh, yeah. He finds his way to the free throw line. Quincy Guerrier, no doubt about it, has played better in conference.
True.
But, yeah, I mean, it's everybody needs to play well.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm. Everyone needs
this
to play well.
This needs to be an A game from Syracuse to hang in there against Duke.
I think my key for this one is going to be Dolezaj. I don't think that anyone else, not that no one else matters, but I think you know for the most part what you're going to get from Dolezaj and Boeheim at this point. They're going to give you that similar game, but Dolezaj, as we've kind of seen in conference play, is the key to this offense. You're seeing a lot of guys in the national media, anyone who's covering a Syracuse basketball game, talks about how Dolezaj is kind of the MVP in terms of just utter value, not in the form of best player, which every league seems to give it out as, but in terms of sheer value, Dolezaj is the key to this offense thriving. If Syracuse is going to win this game, you're going to need him to play well, not just defensively and offensively, but he's got to be, Yeah, defensively and offensively.
Right.
But you need him to be that distributor that you've seen. He's a really good passer, and if he's going to be able to, you know, have that 13-point game and just distribute, because he draws some attention. He's a versatile player. You've kind of seen him at moments. I know he didn't play a great Clemson game, but that one moment in the first half where he put the ball on the floor, a nice spin move to create an open layup, I feel like he's got the ability to do that more frequently. He just doesn't try it. So if he's going to be able to get into that groove, find that rhythm, and distribute and score a little bit, I think it puts Syracuse in a really strong position offensively to compete with Duke.
Yeah, and for me, I think one of the keys, it's a little bit out of left field here, but don't let a guy like Matthew Hurt come in and light you up and beat you. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about Carey and Jones and Stanley, and Syracuse can do what they want to try and stop those guys, but it's more of neutralizing, because all three of those guys are some of the best talent in the country. They're really great players. But there are guys like Matthew Hurt. Hurt himself shoots 42% from three. And he has gone off for 22, 25 points, scored over 15 multiple times. If he starts lighting it up and a guy like Hurt gets into double digits in the first half or has 15 points, then Syracuse has no options. They need to at least contain the outside guys and see if Carey, Jones, and Stanley can beat them.
Well, what we've learned historically from Syracuse basketball is if someone's going to go off for a career day, it's going to happen against the 2-3. You saw it with Kyle Guy last season. You've seen it time and time again. People love to have career highs against Syracuse.
Kevin Mack on Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If a guy like Matthew Hurt gets hot, like you were saying, when all the attention is on Carey, Jones, and Stanley, then it puts Syracuse in a tough spot, because this is a deep team. They've got options. But that is, I mean, now I'm kind of convinced that's going to be the story of the game, is that Matthew Hurt goes off for 30 points, because it's just happened so many times and is kind of the underlying theme when it comes to opponents beating Syracuse basketball.
My prediction for this one, I think Syracuse loses a close one. I think it's going to be somewhere in the 78-71 range, if I had to guess.
That's fair. I think they can hang around. I don't know if they can win. I like that score option, but I'm going to put it at 10 points. So I like your 78 for Duke. I'll go 78-68.
Yeah, I'm gonna be the furthest blowout of all of them. Still not terrible, but I don't see this going very well. I'm going to go somewhere around 82-70. I'll say 82-70.
All right.
None of the Ostrom Avenue podcast here is extremely optimistic, but if there's one thing you can say about Syracuse basketball, they always seem to have that one signature upset in the ACC. We'll see if it comes Saturday at home against Duke. Tip-off at 8 o'clock from the Carrier Dome. We'll get you started right here on WAER. We've got a special hour-long countdown to tip-off. Be sure you're tuning in at 7 o'clock. We'll have plenty of good content for you leading up to the biggest game of the regular season for Syracuse. For Ben Shulman and Owen Valentine, I'm Brendan Mortensen. We'll talk to you next time.